Thank you so much, and sorry for your loss. Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, June 25th, 2013, and ask if everyone would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chair, before we go on, if I may, I would just like to take the opportunity to express our condolences. I just received word that the Veterans Affairs Director in Boone County was killed in an accident yesterday, and Brett McLean, our director, has wanted to reach out to Boone County supervisors to assist them in their interim with veteran issues. And I just made a contact call, and I just wanted you guys and the public to be aware that our office is willing to assist in these difficult times there in Boone County. So I certainly wanted to express our condolences to the family and the members in that community for their loss.
Well said. Okay. All right, that takes us to the third item on the agenda, which is public comment number one. This is a comment period for members of the public to address the board for on topics on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Consideration of minutes. This is the June 18th minutes.
Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions. We have all forms.
Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions passed. Consent agenda. We have everything here. No additions to
that. Oh, my goodness.
A rarity.
Move approval of the consent agenda as submitted.
Second.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. Wow. Do-do-do-do-do. No public hearing items today. That takes us to additional items. Consideration of Resolution 1390, FY14 Appropriation Resolution, Lisa Markley. Hi, Markley.
Good morning, gentlemen.
You mean you actually want to be able to have some money to spend as we start the new fiscal year?
You know, July 3rd, we're going to, you know, have claims ready to go, and then July 5th, we're going to do payroll, and we kind of need the dollars to do that. So as your wish, I have brought to you a resolution that appropriates the FY14 budgeted dollars in the amount of 50% for every department at this point in time.
And this is what we've done the last couple of years.
Yeah, this is what we've done the last couple of years. There are a couple departments that have talked to me already about the fact that they are probably going to need amendments right off the bat and or more than the 50%. I know that IRVM is wanting to go ahead and get their tractor taken care of so they can get some use out of it this year yet. So I only did 50% right now. I can always appropriate another 50% for them if I need to, and then we will probably be talking amendment in July or August.
Yeah, well, for me, this gives us kind of the foundation, and then the board gets to consider the special needs as we go from there. So questions for Lisa?
Nope.
I'll move approval of Resolution 1390.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further conversation? Any further questions? Hearing none. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1390 appropriating 50% for FY14 passes. Next item on our agenda is consideration of Resolution 1391 to execute and authorize a 28E for Central Iowa Community Services. Deb and Jessica. Deb Shildroth and Jessica Reynolds. As I try to be more formal. Oh, yeah, that's right up my alley.
Well, good morning. The 28E agreement before you is for the formation of our Mental Health and Disability Services Region, which will be called Central Iowa Community Services. Involves 8 counties: Hamilton, Franklin, Hardin, Boone, Story, Marshall, Jasper, and Madison. And I would like to note that this is the shell agreement. We're aware that the Department of Human Services has a copy of this agreement. They've had that copy since the end of April. They're working with the Attorney General's office on working on a consensus to determine how much more information needs to be included in the 28E agreement. So we know that at some point in time there will be an amendment, and we'll have to refile the agreement once we get that word from the Department of Human Services. For the purposes of today, I would like the board to consider moving forward on the agreement before you. This will help us form the regional board and start working on a lot of the nitty-gritty and the details that the region needs to have in place by July 1st of 2014. So this gives us time to work and plan carefully on the things that need to be done for our region. The other document that was with the 28E agreement that was more or less for your information are the fiscal policies. That talks about the pooling of dollars and how that will work, how they will be distributed. That is just an FYI. Those fiscal policies will be reviewed and considered by the regional board when they meet sometime later in July for their organizational meeting.
And I think I asked this last time we discussed this, and I just want to make sure as we go through. So the 28E that we're talking about executing today, while it has not been approved by DHS, and there could be some changes, this will create this region because we as a county are empowered to create a 28E to organize with other counties. That's what this will do. This will allow us to formally form that board, which will start to make the policies and procedures and everything else we do.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yesterday, in my meeting with Director Palmer and Rick Schultz, this discussion topic was discussed. He was very confident that the issues before the AG's office is very minor, and said that, and I told him what we was on our agenda today, and he saw no reason why we shouldn't be able to go ahead and move forward with our plans, and said if there are some issues that they address or the AG office address of clarification, they will work with the individual regions or counties to do that. He did tell us that last fall, Christy Harshberger from ISAC worked with a draft 28E agreement that they have looked at, they have approved, and they said that it had all of the code issues contained, and any county that pretty much followed that, he felt would be in very good standings and should not really be an issue. I did discuss with him, though, the difference in some counties from a legal standpoint. It is very difficult to really move forward with the full organizational and structure when you really don't have a legal entity verified by the state. And he said, yes, he's very much aware of that. He says they just got this couple days ago the final update from the AG's office. And so within about a few days, some information will come out, and so maybe I think there's a discussion this Friday with Linda Hinton and some others that maybe there'll be some more information available. But he didn't see any reason why we could not continue to move forward since they had already received our proposal.
I appreciate you having that conversation with Director Palmer, Wayne. And just for the board's information, we have worked hand-in-hand with Christy Harshberger at ISAC throughout this entire process.
Okay. Jessica, what do you think of the author of this 2080? Is it somebody you're comfortable with their legal expertise?
Absolutely, yes.
That was good.
Yeah, I know it's not recognized in here, but I just want to make sure that we're where we need to be. This body has gone ahead and selected Wayne to be our representative on this board. Is that accurate?
That is correct. And Paul Toot is the alternate.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Paul, anything?
No.
Okay. Now would be the time.
I would move the authorization of the resolution 1391 to execute and authorize the 2080 agreement for Central Iowa Community Services as submitted.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further questions? Any other clarifications? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 1391 passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Story County will be the filing entity for this, so once it's approved by all the other member counties, we'll get those signature pages and we'll get it filed with the Secretary of State's office.
Okay.
Thank you.
Super. Okay.
Next item is consideration of contract with Ames Economic Development Commission, Ames, Iowa, for economic development services in the amount of $85,000. It is effective July 1st, 2013 through June 30th of 2014. And Leanne is presenting this to us.
I just have a few highlights to share with the board. In front of you, you do have a contract that has been signed by Dan Culhane on behalf of the Ames Economic Development Commission. It includes a payment schedule of quarterly payments beginning July 1st. That first one would be $25,000 and then $20,000 for the remaining three quarterly payments. There's a reporting period or a reporting requirement that by quarterly they are here in person to report and then monthly provide written reports. And that would start July to August as well. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions on this agreement? Leanne, as I see it, these first 6 months are going to be crucial that not only the three of us, but the AEDC, along with our smaller communities, all start to figure out what this can be, because then we'll be entering into the budget period and we'll have to make some decisions of where we're going based on 6 months of information. So I would just ask that you encourage everybody involved to really dig in quickly, because we're going to need as much information as we can get. Other questions for Leanne?
No, have it on.
I'll move approval of the contract with Ames Economic Development Commission.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Leanne, thank you. Next item. God, we're already on page five. That's pretty good. Next item is consideration of site development plan of application for zoning permit 7080, a commercial industrial zoning permit for construction of phase two of the first of the E Free Church, located in section 20 of Franklin Township. And you'll be filling in for Charlie today, Leanne?
Home ill. Normally, these are on your consent agenda. This has one issue, and we would recommend approval of the site plan with the condition that parking lot landscaping shall be addressed for the entire site upon phase three construction or within 3 years, whichever is sooner. The land development regulations have a set parking ratio and require parking lot landscaping. Let me get the exact reference. The ratio requires they would have to provide 45 trees. The formula would require 63 trees in one section and 33 trees in another section. They're lacking that by 20 or so. But the idea is they'll phase out the development, so it's a little bit premature to plant the trees and then remove them. So we're saying with phase three or within 3 years, if phase three does not come forward.
Okay, and it looks to me like, Leanne, and maybe just talk me through this, that this also is going to give access straight to Cameron School Road. Am I seeing the map correctly?
Correct.
Yeah, right.
Correct.
And has our county engineer had a chance to look at that? Does that comply with everything that we ask?
We do have a driveway entrance permit. Have you acted on
no.
it? You approve the okay. The application's been filed, but no action on the permit's been taken yet.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Other questions for Leanne?
I would entertain
a motion.
I would move approval of the site development plan with the condition.
Second.
80.
Any further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Permit is approved with noted additional requirements. Next item is discussion and consideration of identification badge policy, and this is the first. We will have a 7-day review depending on how this conversation goes. Alyssa Wignall and Cal Pearson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't remember the exact date, but it's been a little bit a while ago that the board approved the purchase of the identification badge system, the printer and everything to do that, and we were given direction to come up with a policy. So that's what this does. It covers pretty much everything. The identification badges will also be their keyless entry access to the building. So instead of carrying a fob and an identification badge, employees will just have that badge, and that will get them into the appropriate office, whatever buildings they have access to. The policy also discusses replacement and fraudulent use of those. It's just to cover all the bases of having an ID badge. A lot of employers do. I know Black Hawk County is just implementing an ID badge system, and Johnson County has had theirs in place quite a while, is my understanding. Do you guys have any questions on the policy?
I think there was some questions maybe you had or you received earlier that this isn't a government ID. This is an ID for Story County employees.
Correct. This would be different than the DOT provided, you know, if our employees go and get a government ID through that. This would just be used for official county business.
Yeah, yesterday I did have the opportunity to visit with a couple of elected officials just regarding the policy and a clarification as to some of the language in the policy, and I felt that at the end of that discussion we were able to relieve some of the concerns. I also went back and visited with Cal after that visit, and he pointed out to me that clearly within the policy some of the concerns that were expressed were there and had been anticipated, which recognizes that elected offices and departments did have some scrutiny. However, I think it was clear to me that the overall intent of this policy was that the badge would be available to be displayed on an individual pending possibly some safety risk and so forth. So I think the language that you put forth with the assistance of Assistant Attorney Jessica Reynolds and so forth certainly conveys, in my opinion, many of the initial concerns. However, I'd like to just for the record acknowledge that change is sometimes difficult for a lot of folks to identify and adjust to initially. But the fact that this badge identification will also have the keyless entry to a particular building, it is very important that people plan on having it with them. The issue seems to be more or less is, did we define what displayed means? And again, I tried to give my own interpretation of that, saying that no individual needs to necessarily have it on a lanyard around their neck or pinned on their chest. They could have a little hook on the side or the belt or some way, but it would be readily available if needed be, and I think that was clearly understood in the policy. So I think that, the other question is the identification. One of the questions brought to my attention was, do you have to have your full first and last name? And I think that is yet to be debated and discussed, maybe departmental-wise. I can see in some cases having the first name being bold and no last name, or I can see having first and last name. Personally, I like the idea of a department identification, but that may or may not be an issue that, some departments have, and I think over the 7 days we will be able to collect responses from the various departments regarding the policy. And I just really asked our department and elected officials to really recognize the overall scope and purpose of why we're doing this. And anymore, you cannot go into almost any building, public building, today without some form of identification. This is becoming the norm rather than exception. And I think we are moving in the right direction with safety foremost, not only for our employees, but for the general public. I understand that Cal, when vendors come in and use and are doing work here, we have some way to identify their purpose and why why they're in the building and so forth. And so I think this is just another very important step that we can take as a county. And I really want to thank Alyssa for all the research you did and the working with the county attorney's office and Cal and bringing us to this point. And hopefully this will be something that our employees will recognize, that it enhances our recognition that they are indeed an outstanding employee of Story County, and it should not be looked upon as anything other than that. That's just my comment. So,
yep, I think you're right. Cal, remind me, cost difference, the little gray fobs that we issue now, the difference between those and these ID badges.
Actually, the fob itself was probably a little bit more expensive than the card and the lanyard accessories that we have to complete carrying the card if you wear it on your neck or clip it. So it's kind of a wash. They're pretty close to the same, but the fob was just a little bit more, around $7 or $8, I think.
Okay. And Alyssa, you feel good with the flexibility we have written into this policy where we can address any of the concerns that Wayne mentioned as we go down the road?
I do. I just want to reiterate that if for some reason, you know, wearing the ID badge poses a safety or security hazard, they just need to have it readily available. If they feel like they're not in a safe situation, they can stick it in their pocket. Obviously, if we have facilities that are going to be up on a ladder or doing work, I wouldn't want them wearing the lanyard around their neck. It does pose a safety hazard, so they just need to use common sense in that situation.
Other questions? Paul, anything?
Yep.
Okay. This is up for 7-day review, which is not really going to be 7-day review. It's going to be 14-day review. Because our next meeting is claims only, so we'll come back and revisit this again on July 9th, I believe, if I got my calendar dates right.
Okay. Well, I would move the authorization to move forward with the identification policy for the 7-day review as our policy outlines.
Second.
Motion second. Further discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Pending 7-day, really 14-day review.
Right.
Thank you. Right. No agency reports. Departmental reports. We get to see Leanne Harder again. The trifecta.
I'm going to start out just going over existing programs and then, of course, end with our permit activity. We have had a very busy quarter. We have the planning service community is up and going through the pilot program. We have McCallsburg, Kelly, and Colo. Charlie DeSell in our office is working with McCallsburg. So far, in the pipeline, I should say, he's working on getting McCallsburg as a participating community in the National Flood Insurance Program. Recreated the zoning map, recreated the drainage tile map, working on applying for TIF. Looking into other funding sources for waterline looping project, as well as a storm sewer project that came to light shortly after we started reaching out to McCallsburg, and reviewing all subdivision zoning and building codes, and then looking at setbacks in the older part of downtown to see if they are prohibitive on possible future projects and buildings. Kelly is Ryan Newstrom, and Ryan has been working with Kelly to really do a full-scale audit of their comprehensive plan and then reviewing and analyzing the zoning and subdivision regulations. So more of the in-house and then the reporting back. I've been working with Colo, working on addressing, whether they have posted it or not, and then making some maps through GIS with water lines, sewer lines, storm sewer lines. And those were all created, and I'm just updating them, too. This next project is a community technical assistance program that the board approved, and it went into effect, and all projects had to be done by June 30th. The deadline to submit applications was the early part of June. This was the application that went out, and this is the details in the communities we received. Of the the total 10 eligible communities, 8 did apply for funding. for a total of $23,287.50. See the breakdown. The communities were Colossian, Cambridge, McCallsburg, Kelly, Gilbert, Maxwell, and Collins. A majority were for capital improvements plans, but a couple of codification projects, and then Colo used it towards standardizing a development agreement for the business park that could be applicable for future developments that come forth.
Leanne, let me make sure that I understand kind of the way all this is dovetailing together, and just help me through if I'm missing something here. It looks to me like, and we'll pick out Colo, McCallsburg, and Kelly since they're part of our pilot program utilizing you guys. So we started off as a county by offering our smaller communities the opportunity to go update some of their planning documents, whatever it was they needed to update. Many took advantage of it, but those three specifically did. Now we've gone in with this pilot project where we offer our planners to them, and I'll say for this first 6 months, with no cost to the community, just to see what it's going to be, which I would take as taking some of this work that they had done and now starting to see how that fits into everything else and starting to utilize some of it. And then you combine that with the contract that we just approved with the AEDC to provide economic development services to all these small communities, but specifically those three, where now they have the documentation in place that they need to be able to conduct a plan. They have access to a planner who can actually help them down the road of what kind of things do they need to be looking at. And now they have access to professional economic development people, which should help them capitalize on any opportunity that might be out there. Am I seeing that close to right, the way this is all fitting together?
I think having the other two programs in place before the economic development program really hit the road running was a positive step to have occur. This technical assistance program was never planned and came through the pipeline, and I think had a very positive impact. And so there's now maybe a level of trust for what's yet to come their way. Kira, Slater and Roland were the two that did not participate, just for your benefit. Current long-range planning, April, Bella Homes preliminary plat, that's 15 new residential lots northeast of the city of Ames, was approved and came forward to the Board of Supervisors. May, the Planning and Zoning Commission reviewed the codification project, specifically those elements related to the land development regulations, and took a break in June. We actually were not able to meet in June. The applicant did not have the materials to go forward to the meeting. For Board of Adjustment, April, they had a very busy meeting. They had a Jemson Ramsey conditional use permit. This is an indoor recreational facility along Highway 210 to the southwest of Huxley. A modification request, which you just took action on the zoning permit component of for E Free Church of Ames, and then the firing range modification for the sheriff's firing range. They actually remanded the E Free Church back and then went back and took action again in May. And then in May, they also removed reviewed the biannual review for the CUP 01-09 Isaac Walton League Ames chapter and removed that requirement for a biannual review. So that's the last time they'll see that. And they, too, took off the month of June. They both, the Planning and Zoning Commission Board, do have July agendas. Conceptual review, we've seen Ames Sports Realty. That is the old Cannebrook property on 190th Street, north of Ames, north of the Rose Prairie subdivision. This will be going to the July Planning and Zoning Commission. They are proposing to create an indoor recreational facility with indoor turf for soccer, eventually hard court surfaces for indoor baseball, racket, all different types of indoor sports.
So taking what was a horse barn and turning it into
indoor rec. Yep. Okay. Something we really don't have in Story County.
Off of 190th. Is that just east of the golf course or? Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, that was the old property that went under.
Right.
And who, if you can share, who is Ames Sports Realty?
I cannot think of the name for the life of me at this point. I can get back to you.
Yeah, I'd like to know. Thank you.
I'll have to get back to you. The CWEX is Commercial Wind Energy Conversion Systems. We've had a company out of Des Moines called Optimum Renewables looking at different properties in Story County. Right now, we've seen conceptual review for 2 megawatt turbines from anywhere from 22 to 24 turbines. 2 east of Nevada, 3 west of Nevada, north of, between US 30 and Lincoln Highway, 5 south of US 30 between Ames and Nevada, 3 to 5 west of Huxley, 2 to the northeast of Ames, west of Interstate 35, just north along 190th, and then go east of that, and along 190th, there's 3 to 5 north of the road and 2 south of the road.
And how big did you say that in conceptual review?
2 megawatts.
Is that the same ones. As... Okay.
So these are... the Coos property, that's the one west of I-35 along 190th, and the ones west of Huxley will likely go to the August Planning and Zoning Commission. They all may meet the deadline for the August Planning and Zoning Commission. Different conditional use permits, but one applicant, because they are not neatly located in close proximity to each other. We're going to process them as individual applications. Capital improvements plan will be starting kickoff meeting with the task forces tomorrow morning, in fact, and so I'll bring more to you. But a couple weeks ago, you did approve the task force and the time frame. The work program items, delving into that, the goal setting sessions have been finalized. Just a quick summary on that. The Institute for Public Affairs did receive payment in the amount of $1,246.49 from Story County. ISAC matched that, so the project did come in under less than what we had anticipated. The RFP for economic development, you just took action on, and be working with them as we go forward. My understanding is they are accepting resumes for that position right now. I don't know that they've interviewed anyone yet. Connect Iowa, an intern has been brought on board through AUDC, aside from the economic development contract. This was in the works even before that. They're doing the data gathering and getting that so that we can bring that project to fruition by August or closely thereof. Tillable farmlands, we did get some feedback from Mike Cox and some comments regarding the management agreements that are properties owned or managed by Story County Conservation. We're now working on that to see if there are any viable options for this tillable farmland project. And just in the past week or so, there's been some interesting discussions through IGIC LISTSERV, Iowa Geographic Information Council, I think is what the acronym is. There's become an issue on drift concerns for organic producers, and specifically as it relates to IRVM properties or IRVM programs. So I'm going to reach out to Joe, too, and see if there's anything we need to address in Story County. The state is working on updating the sensitive crops directory, which will identify the organic producers in Story County. But it's not directly related to this, but I think it's something from Story County's standpoint, we should be aware of it and be able to address if need be. Community gardens at county-owned facilities. This is one that's still reviewing Ames School Gardens, seeing the successes they're achieving, but really our efforts went more towards this quarter with working with Nevada as they started the farmers market, which is up and going every Tuesday from 5 to 7 up at the City Hall. The community band is there and plays, I think, starting at 7, and sometimes there are meals there, and it's just a nice little venue. It's good for Nevada downtown. Community services listings, we're still working with facilities to make sure all the information is correct. There's some differences in hours listed on the website versus actual building hours versus actual office hours, and so we want to make sure that we're consistent in all the opportunities that we have for the public to be notified. Once this is finalized, the facilities management department will take them and frame them and locate as appropriate. Ames Urban Fringe Plan, we are meeting in early July, we being staff of Ames, Gilbert, and Story County, to discuss the scope of review, but you did take action to modify the work program to make sure it had a TBD end frame, which we had a determined end date, but we'll come back to you with that once we would define the scope of services. subdivision regulations review is completed. That was adopted with the codification project. If you have any questions while I'm going through, just let me know, too. Comprehensive review of temporary mobile home permits, conditional rezoning agreements. We still have one outstanding issue on temporary mobile home permits that we'll be working with through the enforcement. It's actually become a little less temporary and more on the permanent side without the required permits. So we're not confident that the setbacks are satisfied. So that may take on a little bit more time to achieve success with that or achieve resolution with that. E-processing of applications should go into effect beginning of the fiscal year, working with Renee Tweet and Barb Steinbeck, and Matt Corey in the Health Department has been really leading it too. And then, of course, this was one of Kristen's projects on our work program. So we're really excited for this. Kristen's created an invoice that we can and receipt that we can issue right from the public terminal when you come in, so we don't have to have the time to handwrite the receipt and really maybe increase level of customer service at the counter. Access database cleanup. Recall after we finished the scanning, we decided we didn't have enough of looking at parcel numbers, so we delved into this project. It's about 70% complete. If you see where the arrow goes under our address column, we still have a lot of rural routes in that address. So we're just trying to clean that up, get all that. In some cases, we don't have parcel numbers, and so we may never be able to identify where that zoning permit is issued. But as you said, we're on zoning permit number 7,000-something, so this is quite an enormous task. Enforcement cases, following up the work session with the board in I think it was April, maybe May, we conducted site visits based on our territories. And so Charlie, Ryan, and I each went out, kind of narrowed down the 90-plus cases down to a more manageable, about 5 priorities each. And we'll be getting the necessary reports from the treasurer's office and then working with Jessica over the summer months to do the follow-up as required for each to really finalize out the old code enforcement issues. Letters of map changes, this is always ongoing, but we have reviewed all the FEMA databases, and we have all the files I've not yet entered, and we'll be finalizing the standard operating procedures in early July. Permit activity, we have issued 14 agricultural, this is from April till today's date. 14 agricultural exemptions issued. Majority are accessory buildings, but 2 new single-family dwellings were included in that. We've issued 59 zoning permits. That includes 10 new single-family dwellings. When I last reported, I likely gave you the valuations for these. So the next numbers I give you won't include, these won't include valuations. These are, if you'll recall, we first take in an application, then we issue a preliminary development permit, and that's where the money is collected. Since April, we've actually issued 58 new preliminary development permits. That's a really high number for this almost half of the year. Really high number for us. That includes 7 new single family dwellings for $2.2 million total valuations. Average value is $313,000 of a new single family dwelling. This does not include the other 2 single family dwellings. So in this past quarter, we've issued, we've seen applications for 9 new single-family dwellings. The highest amount for just the single-family dwelling, this one include the attached garage or any decks or porches or anything, was about $550,000, and the lowest valuation was $166,000. The average value, it should be $330,000, not $30,000. I left off a 3. Total new permit valuations for this quarter was $2.75 million. Vast majority of that was the new single-family dwellings. We've issued 6 property research reports, 2 each month. 8 new applications for floodplain development have been submitted, 7 pre-construction phase permits issued, and 10 permits issued, final permits. So those were already in the pipeline that have finaled out. Over the past quarter, we completed 60 inspections. We've been out in the field quite a bit. We have 1 new home business permit that's come in. That's for a cleaning business. TIF applications, we revised the policies and procedures and brought that forward for board review in April, May, and we were evaluating requests from Collins and Zeering, getting a lot of email and phone call inquiries from other communities saying, what is this about? How do we apply? I have putting together a standard FAQ that we can respond to them with questions that we're getting, types of applications, minimum, maximum amount, matching grant funds, or matching funds required, and be able to reply with each consistently to each and every one. But these are due by August 1st, so we'll be bringing that forward to you. Other projects, I did write an article for the APA is the commissioner on CPAT. Went through the Heartland Economic Development course, I'm a proud graduate of that now. Charlie was on the conference planning committee for the COSO Spring Conference. I've heard lots of positive feedback. That was a very well-run, managed conference. I was actually elected chair of IFSMA, Iowa Floodplain and Stormwater Management Association, in May. And with that, too, IFSMA has finalized our CRS toolkit, community rating system, which I'm hoping Story County next calendar year will be able to use that toolkit and take a serious look at CRS. It's a very, very nice tool that will help us out immensely. And IFSMA is also preparing a flood response toolkit for communities, and so I'm reviewing that now. Kristen and I went and met with folks from Hometown Pride, and as we get into Leadership Nevada, hope that we can bring these folks in for a presentation to the board. This is part of the Keep Iowa Beautiful movement. And then Kristen and I also went to the SMART Conference on Economic Development in Des Moines during that last snowstorm of May. Sounds wrong to say. Other projects, completed the entrepreneurial and small business development strategies through University of Oklahoma Economic Development Institute. I just put this up there. The last forum posting that they asked us to respond to was what are two approaches that we might look at in our region. And so as we go forward with economic development, and we're kind of looking at our department's role in it, what I brought out was basic technical assistance, how do you develop a business plan, different items like that, and the possibility of looking at a revolving loan fund and putting policies and procedures together with that. So I may be coming forward to you in the year or so with some ideas on that. Upcoming vision fact sheet will be starting, the CIP work, finalizing comprehensive plan audit and the zoning map audit. Those should be coming to you in later summer, early fall. Getting our GIS information online, more than what we have right now. Reviewing the E911 addressing requirements, posting, etc. Of course, the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Planning, since you did accept the funds today. The Downtown Facade Grant Program, which is a new project that you budgeted and put in our work program. And then, reminder, Leadership Nevada, amidst all this, is coming up on November 7th. Are there any questions?
Yeah, are you busy? Mm-hmm. Do you find enough time to take a breath? Awesome. Awesome report. I'm sure that I speak for the entire board. Your leadership and involvement in all the different projects, some of the new ones and initiatives that we've started, has just been phenomenal, and we certainly appreciate that. And it gives us a great level of confidence that we have someone who has the background and knowledge that can give some input and guidance and direction so that we develop a system that's going to meet the needs of Story County and help us move to the future. So, again, thank you for your involvement here and all the hard work that you put forth on behalf of all of us.
Well, Seth, anything? Leanne, thank you very much. Next is liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne?
Liaison assignments, no, but I do have a committee kind of an update. I'd like to maybe just yield to Mr. Toot. First of all, mine may take a little longer than anticipated.
All right. I do have an update. I'm kind of the unofficial liaison with the medical examiner, and I have an update, so it's everybody's favorite topic. He just sent me an email, and he goes by calendar year. So as of the date of this email is June 21st. Calendar year, he's investigated 41 deaths. 12 of those were investigated by medical examiner investigators. and 29 of those were investigated either by the medical examiner himself or one of his deputies. 14 of those, 41, were sent to the state medical examiner's office for autopsy down in Ankeny. And if you guys remember here, a few months ago, we instituted a competitive bid process for the transportation down to the medical examiner's office. And to date, because we did accept a $400 bid for each one of those transports as opposed to the $600 we'd been paying, we've saved $2,600 on medical examiner transports. So there's the update from the medical examiner.
Thanks for the update. Now to you, Wayne.
Well, first is just a brief one, and I don't have all the details, but I wanted to alert you in case you get phone calls. The service that HERTA, the public transit provider, is providing for Story County residents has really exceeded our expectation. We initially thought about 500 additional riders outside of the city of Ames. We have gone over maybe 1,000 riders and so forth, and we're having to actually institute schedules where in a community there are certain times for pickups, and the idea behind that is to probably have more than just one rider on a bus, anywhere from 5 to 10, and this is causing some concern for some individuals. I just received a call this morning, and I referred it to the office, and they'll be in contact with them because the direct response that they may have been able to have in the past is just not cost effective for us to be able to continue to operate. But we will be trying to work with them through that. So I wanted to keep you guys aware that this change is difficult for some of our clients because they would like to be able to pick up the phone in 24 hours and be picked up at a certain time and dropped off. And now there's going to be a pickup time in some of these communities several hours before their scheduled appointment, and they may have to sit around and wait and then a little time to actually leave. And so this is not something we had expected, but it's the reality of providing that service when the demand is outgrown our capacity to be able to serve them. So I wanted you to be aware of that.
Wayne, before you move on from HERTA, I'd like us to, as we look at our next budgeting cycle, to consider establishing a route. And in my mind, it's from Ames City Hall over to the Justice Center with maybe a stop at this building. But it just seems to me that is potentially an underserved population, especially as we look at some potential changes with where we may have fines recovery and where we may have some other things housed. And so what kind of funding it would take from Story County to create a dedicated route back and forth between Ames and Nevada.
I certainly can pass that on, and we can take a look at that. And thank you for the suggestion. I do appreciate that. The next update is yesterday I attended, along with members of the ISAC staff and other supervisors, our every other monthly meeting with Director Chuck Palmer from DHS and Rick Schultz. And the gist of most of that discussion obviously centered around mental health redesign and regionalization, but a great deal of the topic centered around Governor Branstad's veto of the MHDS funds. And we were able to get the perspective from Director Palmer regarding where he saw the state of mental health funding based upon this. It was an excellent exchange of information back and forth. Obviously, there were some frustrations shared. I vented a little bit. And I wanted you guys to be somewhat aware that in my role as president of the supervisors affiliate, I'm in the process of working with Linda Hinton and others to draft a response to the governor regarding how we as supervisors in CPC see the impact of the veto affecting delivery of services. And so it, I didn't want you to be surprised. Obviously, once when that draft is completed, I will be running it by our ISAC executive board and getting input from other individuals before it's actually sent. The intent is to send that not only to the governor but to the leadership of the House and Senate, just basically trying to clarify from county's perspective how devastating we see the impact of those vetoes impacting us being able to move forward. And obviously, you know, I want to draft that in such a way, recognizing where the governor is coming from and what his concerns is. And one of the things that was surprising in our meeting is that there was no direct communication with the director of Department of Human Service. It appeared, and the thought is that the governor relied primarily on his staff and the Department of Management, looking at the big picture of the financial picture and where his stated goals were earlier in the budgeting priorities, and saw that perhaps this was going to be a cost factor that was not anticipated. And so I think we are caught in a situation where do we just sit back and not at least let him know that we believe that this decision could have unintended consequences. And so I just wanted you to be aware of that I will not be speaking as Story County Supervisor, but as President of the Iowa Association of Counties Supervisors Affiliate in that response. If each of you received a comment or at least an update from ISAC, and for the record, because the general public, I don't think, really understands a lot of this, and several of the things were in the paper, and there was a Des Moines Register had a comment today, I would like to just read into the record the communication that came from ISAC to all county employees that are members. And it said, Governor vetoes impact counties MHDS funds. Governor Branstad signed 9 bills into law on Thursday. Each of them included line item vetoes. There were 3 votes that negatively impact county mental health disability service MHDS programs. The governor vetoed the $13 million set aside for the risk pool in House File 648. This funding was critical to the counties that had to decrease their property tax revenues to the 4728 level and have ongoing challenges in funding services with current resources. The governor cites the savings from Healthy and Well Iowa, which are unknown and will not start until January 1st of 2014 at the earliest. He also cites funding provided this fiscal year and equalization funds, which the counties above the 4728 will not receive. These counties have no options, in my opinion, or in the ISAC leadership's opinion, but to cut services. The second veto was a policy language of Senate File 406 that would have moved the mental health advocates to the Department of Inspection and Appeals. This is something that Iowa counties have been working on for about 7 years. The veto message states that the advocates are currently county employees and should remain so, and that's flatly not true. And we wanted to convey that message to the governor, that the advocates are employees of the courts who are compensated by the counties, and all of the employment responsibilities other than payment lies with the courts, and that the governor's veto rejects the work that has been done by not only the courts, the advocates, the DHS, the sheriffs, the counties, and other stakeholders. And we hope that in the future this could be looked at and revisited because we do not have any oversight responsibilities. And then the third veto demonstrated the ongoing lack of true partnership between in MHDS service delivery. Last session, DHS shifted the funding of the state payment program from the general fund to federal block grant funding. This made the appropriated funding subject to federal cuts through sequestration and protected a DHS program from these cuts. The legislator added language in the standings budget bill, Senate File 452, that would backfill any cuts that occurred with Medicaid funding, and the governor saw fit to veto this language. So with these three actions from the county's perspective, it puts us in a very uncertain path over the next few months for this fiscal year, and I believe that we need to at least express the concerns from counties as to how we view the potential devastation of this decision. And so I just wanted to add that to the record and give you just a little bit of a heads up. That's something that I'm working on, and I will be working with Lindy Hinton, who is our lobbyist in the mental health area, in trying to draft a positive response.
Outstanding. Wayne, thanks for keeping us up to date on that. I have nothing. So we're on to other reports, which is discussion of motor grader purchase options. Darren Moon. And just for the record, this was something that we had talked about several months ago. Darren and I went and met with the city of Ames and how they do some of their larger equipment. At that point, this board directed Darren to come back to us with options, and so that's where we are today.
They're going to let us use theirs, and we won't have to buy any more?
Yeah.
Oh, is that that? Oh, okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. With me is Todd Dolphin, the maintenance superintendent. He helped me put some of these numbers together. As Rick said, we met with the City of Ames fleet manager and to see if we could come away with any ideas from them. And two things we kind of came away with is, one, they use a guaranteed buyback program, a little bit shorter term than we had, because we've actually done that in our department in the past. We did four guaranteed motor grader buybacks about 8 to 10 years ago. The issue we ran into with that is when they came due for the buyback, we also had a new motor grader to buy in the same year, so we had to come up with both funding in the same year, and we could never do that, so the program kind of went by the wayside. The other thing we kind of took out of that meeting was they have established equipment fund that gets funded on a regular basis, and that's something that we could possibly look at to fund our equipment in the future. I just took a screenshot. This is our spreadsheet that shows all of our equipment in secondary roads. Kind of categorizes the motor graders, single axle trucks, tandem trucks. It's about 3 pages long, but at the very bottom it shows an annual cost of $800,000 is what we need to be spending each year to maintain the current level we have right now. Right now we're spending, including the this year it dropped a little bit, but $295,000 lost, and about $200,000 to $300,000 a year out of our local equipment budget. So we average maybe $600,000 a year is what we are spending. So we are falling short of that $800,000 each year. We thought we'd start with the motor graders. Motor graders are almost half of that entire $800,000 amount. So we'd start with the motor graders, looking at them in particular. It's a little small, but 98, that's the year, the last two digits of the unit number. So we have a 15-year-old motor grader all the way up to a brand-new 2013 motor grader, 13 total. Hours are in the next column. We consider our danger zone 12 years or 12,000 miles. That's when you really start to see transmissions and motors go. Over on the right, like I said, assuming an interest rate of 4%, we should be spending $387,000 a year to maintain that 13 motor grader fleet. Just a few things to point out before we get into some of the options. 13 motor graders currently, 6 are under warranty and 7 are without warranty. We've been replacing one motor grader per year. trying to maintain the fleet status, an estimated $295,000 per motor grader. Three motor graders will fall out of warranty in the next 12 months. That leaves just three motor graders with warranty. We do have a new one in the budget for this fall, so that will actually raise it up to four under warranty and nine without. The reason three are falling out is because in 2008 we actually had a motor grader burn, so we had insurance cover, so we got two new motor graders in a year, so that helped us get a little bit back up to speed, but they will both fall out in the same year of warranty. We've reduced our motor grader fleet over the past 20 years to make up for funding shortfalls. We went from 1.16 motor grader districts down to 13, now we're down to 10. That's kind of helped us maintain that fleet. Without doing that, we'd be in a lot more serious trouble. If we went any more than that, I'd just point out we'd probably see some real noticeable reduction in services, mostly in the winter, getting people plowed out. What we define as risk is a major failure without a warranty. Engine replacements right now are about $47,000, and transmissions are about $40,000. This spring, we actually had two major failures. Thankfully, warranty covered all those, and one was actually a Cat motor grader was out of warranty on one of the sides, so it was technically out of warranty, but Cat backed up their machine, and actually we were billed, I think, $1,000 out of the $40,000 bill, so we really appreciated that. Under current practices, we can't reduce our motor graders from 13 to 12 like we could in some of the other options, and I'll get into that more later. We will not be able to reduce the financial risk at the current practices. To build an equipment fund, we'd have to purchase a motor grader each year and place a set amount of funds in that equipment fund, and to do both would be difficult. So, and under this scenario, we'd not be able to take advantage of part savings, fuel savings, fleet values, or trade-in values to build our equipment fund like we can in some of the other options I'll cover last. So that takes me into one of the first options. And I'll tell you up front, this one didn't get a lot of consideration from us, so I'll kind of go through this one kind of quick. You'll see what this is, just straight out buying new motor graders to get us up to speed and get them more under warranty. We just kind of came up with a five-year plan. The first year, we'd trade in three at a cost of $769,000 in that first year. And then we go to two, and then fifth year would be one. You can see the cost each year. And to come up with that much in the first year would be very difficult. So that kind of puts this option at the bottom of our list from the start. But when you get down to the bottom, even if we get built up to that level, we're kind of real quickly going back down to where we'd have to come up with $1.8 million in that eighth year, plus a fund that we'd put together to get all new motor graders again. And I think you'll see that there's some better options here we've come up with. So let's go to the next one. This is the financing option. Strictly finance 10 brand new motor graders. To do that, the cost of those 10 would be $2.95 million. We'd have an equity right now of 1.3 that we could use against that. We'll keep two motor graders for spares. So a total finance cost would be $1.6 million is what we'd finance. Estimated payment for that finance would be $350,000 a year. Now this is where we start talking about a part savings. We've calculated about $63,000 a year is what we spend on our motor graders for parts that aren't under warranty.
And that's without a major problem.
Correct. So we've built that in. We'd still be getting that money in our parts budget, but we'd transfer it into that equipment fund instead of use it on parts, is where we're getting the savings of $311 in that five-year period. So we'd need to add another $225,000 per year to that equipment fund so we could replace the fleet at 5 years. So the equipment fund at 5 years would be built up to $1.1 million with this $225 a year. add in that 311 for parts, and we'd have a total equipment fund of 1.4 at the end of that 5 years. So estimated trade value at the end of the 5 years would be $1.7 million. Add this to that trade value, we'd be able to replace that 10 motor graders just by having that $225,000 going in. So the first year we'd have to do both. It'd be the $295 plus the $225. But then the second five-year cycle would only cost us the $225. So this has some upfront costs where down the road it actually get cheaper. And some of the benefits are at the bottom, and those are similar for all the rest of these options. I'll summarize them all when we get done and kind of compare the different options.
Could I just interrupt
sure.
this briefly?
Questions anytime.
As you were talking about the need for the $225,000 per year to replace this in the five-year cycle, as we have Auditor Lucy Martin here, as we go through our budgeting process, would the concept here be similar to where we would have designate set aside funds specifically for the motor grade purchase, sort of like what we did years ago when we wanted to remodel this facility? Oh no, if you could just speak into the mic right quick, so we can record that, please.
Yeah, I would say it's very similar to what we're doing now. We anticipate, you know, buying new election equipment, I think, in fiscal 15. And so you had been putting aside money for that, knowing, you know, when you see a large cost in the future, instead of taking the hit all at once, you can build up that fund.
Okay.
So that's what Darren is proposing.
Great. Thank you.
So now the next page, we'll move on to the lease option. And right up front, I'll tell you, this looks a lot more promising than I thought it would when we started this process out. So the next three sheets, I broke it into three options, and that just changes how the payments are broken out. But they're all the same concept. So we'll start with option one here. Option one, we lease 10 new motor graders right up front for 5 years at a cost at $397,000 per year. This option would apply 100% of the existing fleet value to the equipment fund. Captured part savings again, $311,000 in that 5 year period. And even though we're leasing, we would still end up with equity of $300,000 at the end of that 5 years that we could apply to our trade in. And then some small service savings we threw in. So the total equipment fund after that 5 years would be $1.9 million. This would allow us to reduce our motor grader fleet from 13 to 12 because we'd have much more reliable motor graders and our two spares would be more reliable. All motor graders would be under warranty, so there'd be no unanticipated expenses. Lower inventory due to all motor graders being the same spec. More production, less downtime. After the first 5 years, this is where we get in to what the future would look like down the road. The next 5 years, all we'd have to put in is $100,000 per year to keep that up.
So $397,000 the first five.
Correct.
And then $100,000 after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now the next two options bring that initial cost down, which might make it a little bit more of a possibility with our funding situation. Moving on to option two, what that does is it takes same program, lease the 10, but we'll split that existing equity we have in our motor graders now 50-50. Half of it would go to pay off that lease and half would go into the equipment fund. So it'd be $655 instead of the $1.3 million. What that does simply lowers our initial payments, but our future payments go up $175 that would have to be put into that equipment fund to keep us going on that same path. Now, in the end, at that end of the 5 years, we decide, boy, we don't want to move on with this program anymore. We could up front have a guaranteed purchase price where we could buy those out at that point at $1.2 million. They'd all be, you know, five-year-old machines, but we would have an out that way.
Talk to me about the two spares. Let's say that we were to go down this road. I would assume then we would keep two of the newer ones and get rid of the ones that we were using as spares, so we would end up with five-year-old spares if we went down this road. What does that do to us as far as cost?
That's the one detail that's really not built into this yet, because we haven't decided if we'd keep the old ones or if we go middle-of-the-road ones. So you'd build that in somewhere here. If we went middle-of-the-road ones, you're talking $130,000 range for two of them. So $260,000, you'd split that over the 5 years. So you'd have to add that in here at some point.
Fairly minimal over the 5 years.
Or we could start out, like we had assumed for this, that we'd keep our two oldest ones, so there'd be no cost right now for those. But at some point, you'd probably have to upgrade those.
Yep.
And option three, same concept, but putting none of that fleet value, current fleet value, into the equipment fund. It all go towards the initial lease, so your initial five-year payments would be low, but your future ones go up to $300,000 a year. Now, this kind of compares all those options. Current practice here, we have 13 motor graders. Five are under warranty. That's going to drop next year, a little lower than that. Average age, 7 years. Where the finance and lease options, we'd be at a two-and-a-half-year age average. Equipment fund required, no. And then these two options would require an equipment fund, which would be a new concept for us at the county. Projected annual maintenance cost, $63,000 currently. We'd continue to have that $63,000 at cost, but it'd go into the equipment fund instead of spend it on parts. And that's where you see the first five-year cost here, and the second 5 years is here. That $63,000 is added to these to make the totals at the bottom, because that's still going to be a cost to us. It's just put into the equipment fund. Risk level is high under current practice. Finance option and lease option, risk level is low. We know exactly what we're going to be paying. Reliability, I skipped that one, is low currently, and that would be much higher. So then this is where you can really start look at the option numbers. The cost for the first 5 years currently, this is what we need to be spending. These are the same for the first 5 years and the second 5 years, because we have a 12-year cycle, so it's all averaged. This is what we need to be spending per year for 12 years. So that's why they're the same. You don't see an increase in that second 5 years. These are based on 5-year cycles, so that's what we're spending up front, and that's what would be the second year for financing. And then this, I picked the last option. So it has upfront low cost, and then I think we'd probably go in the middle of the road to make these about the same number, 275 now and in the future, if we went with this route. Now, the equity is the big thing, and that's the decision I think the board's going to have to make. We lose our equity is the big factor here. Right now, we have $1.4 million in equity in our motor graders. I show the equity of each option, but that technically goes away because it's put in to get these lower payments in the future. So you essentially lose your equity. That'll be the biggest change if we switch to one of these.
That is that also factored into the risk options that you kind of listed? I mean, obviously there's some unknowns.
The risk was strictly parts costs and
but the
major
actual
failures.
Lease option allows us to have equipment up and running and more operable and should be more cost effective in terms of maintenance than what we would currently have if we were purchasing it outright.
Well, right. Now help me with this, Darren, because I appreciate the equity that we have built up in these machines. But at the end of the day, it's our responsibility as a county to have equipment that allows us to service the roads we need to service. And it seems to me that having operational equipment would make us be able to service those roads a little better. Mm-hmm. So the equity is good for us when, in fact, we turn around and buy new motor graders. But our goal all the way through should be to have
best
highly serviceable
equipment.
Motor graders all the way through at as consistent a cost annually as possible is the way I see it. Correct. I'm going to stop right there. I saw Civil Attorney Jessica Reynolds get up and get a microphone, so I'm assuming that means she's got something she wants to add.
Thank you. Can you hear me on this
yep.
mic? I just wanted to comment and make sure that the board is aware that if the board is considering a lease option, Iowa Code Chapter 331 is very specific about the level that we as a county can lease, and I would want to sit down with the auditor and Mr. Moon and a liaison from this board and evaluate our total current lease debt and make sure that as we're looking at additional lease debt that we're compliant with the code sure. in that regard. So that code section is very specific, and I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned that to everyone as
Thank
I'm listening.
You.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, and with the note that we will absolutely follow all code sections in anything we do, the question I have is, seems to me that tomorrow is the first meeting of that capital improvement fund group. Darren, I know you're on that group.
Yeah.
It seems to me that the most appropriate thing to happen here may be for this board to send this on to that group for recommendation. I mean, ultimately, anything is going to have to come before this board. But I think I kind of tipped my hand when I said, for me, what's going to be most attractive, if we can, if it's allowable by code, is to get into a situation where we have highly reliable, highly effective motor graders at a consistent cost year after year after year, where we know what we're getting into. Mm-hmm. And so I look at these, and lease option two is the one that jumps off the page to me as making a lot of sense. But I would add a couple things in. I would say that I would want to select, rather than our two oldest motor graders as our backup, I'd want to select two serviceable motor graders as our backups. And then I'd want to build into part of that plan keeping two of the five-year-old ones in every cycle so that we always end up with we don't have any of our motor graders that are more than 10 years old at any point.
Yeah.
And I know there would be some costs associated with that, but if we can get to the point, as allowable by code, that we have a consistent cost every year that the county's having to budget, that seems to me to be more palatable as we go through, where we just know, okay, right now it's $295,000 a year that we plug in. Right. I think there were a few years probably that the board was not able to come through on those as we had some budget concerns. Wayne, you probably remember that. But for this board, we've plugged in $295,000 a year. It looks to me like we might be able to plug in a very similar amount but get better equipment in perpetuity doing it. And I think that would be really, really attractive. But I do think that since we formed this new group to really look at these larger expenditures, that that's the most appropriate place for this to go. Get the opinion of our county auditor and civil attorney on making sure we're doing everything the right way, and then come back with more of a formal recommendation to yep. this body. And I don't mean to speak for you guys, but that's kind of where I see this thing right now.
Well, I hadn't thought of it from that standpoint, but it makes a lot of sense, and that was really one of the whole purposes of that how we were to move forward with the purchase of large items is going through this format. And I think we've identified the key players that need to be a part of that. So I think this will give us the kind of not only the information we need, but will help clarify a little bit about the vision that our engineer is hoping to bring forth as we move forward to meet this demand.
I'll go through a couple more slides real quick. We thought we were being kind of pioneers with this leasing option, but we did the month after an article came out and magazine Cat puts out, and this is actually New Mexico, but big article, and that's what they're doing. They leased all their equipments. They were advertising the fuel savings because the newer machines, you can run them at lower RPMs and have a lot better fuel economy doing it, but they finance their whole fleet this way with the lease option. And just keep in mind some of the other benefits to leasing and getting our fleet up to all current machines. They'd all be under warranty. All machines would have front wheel assist, where I think we're about half and half, half do and half don't now. And same controls, which are a big deal. Right now we have four different controls. The new Cats have just joysticks. We have three other types out there right now, and one motor grader can't jump in a motor grader in another district and take off. We have to road it over there, and that takes extra time. All new model machines and the better fuel efficiency. lower inventory due to all machines being the same spec, and more production with less downtime, and like the budgeting would just be a lot more predictable, and with the establishment of equipment fund too.
Darren, I could be a little off on this, but in prior years we've had some issues with lease options or going this direction. And so I think I would hope that you could also work with Conservation Department and with the County Attorney's Office regarding all of these types of scenarios that we're talking about, because I think this has been one of the issues that in previous years we chose not to use this option because we didn't have really everybody kind of on board and feeling that this was probably the best way to use it. And I don't know if it had anything to do with the code or what our liability was and so forth. But I think that as we move further with this discussion, hopefully with the assistance of Jessica, we'll have that type of information to give the board a clear direction that this is something that we as a county may want to do rather than the outright purchase of these vehicles.
And keep in mind, too, we're only talking about motor graders at this point. Right. To my knowledge, there's nobody that offers a system like this for trucks because they don't know how you're going to use that truck. They're comfortable with how that motor grader is going to be used so they can do something like this. But you haven't heard of a
there are some talking about it now from a truck standpoint because, obviously, they're very large numbers, too. It's to approach a little over $200,000 per unit, and that's kind of the direction we're going, so that may be an option for them.
Okay.
Yeah. And as well as other equipment here in Story County, if you want to really look at a very stable budget number.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Darren, is it fair to say that when this conversation started, you were really, really skeptical on the idea of a lease being able to work in terms, not in terms of code or anything else, but in terms of the way you guys could practically use it and what it would cost?
Yeah, that, and I didn't think the numbers would come out as good as they did. And I guess a lot of that is using up our equity, and that's just the decision we'll have to make if we want to go that route or not. But we do have a motor grader in FY14 here, and I assume we're just going to go down the same normal pathway to purchase our motor grader for that one, because I'm not sure how long it's going to take us to come up with a policy. Unless you see things differently, I'm going to proceed that way with that motor grader. But for now, this was just informational purposes, and it's a lot of information to digest, so take a look at it.
I'm taking this as initial conversation for the FY15 budget, which gives us some time to delve into all of this, figure out what we can and can't do, and then make the best decision we can.
Okay.
For me, FY14 is established, and we need to just move ahead as we've got it established.
Okay. Good. Anything else?
I appreciate you guys being here. That's good work.
Absolutely. Outstanding.
All right, that takes us to public forum number two. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on this agenda. Board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but we may do so in the future. Is there anybody who wishes to address the board at this point? Seeing no one moving to the microphone. Announcements from the supervisors. Wayne?
Yes.
Paul?
I just want to get ahead of the game and publicly and tell my wife happy anniversary tomorrow. 20 years tomorrow.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Okay.
No. If there is nothing further, I would sure entertain a motion.
So move. Adjourn. Move to adjourn.
Moved and second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.